Hello, and welcome to edition number 1208 of the Whitney Talking News, which we are recording in the Town Hall, Whitney, on Thursday the 13th of March. I'm Richard Rayson, and I edited this edition. Beside me at the recording controls, we have Martin Miles. This week we have items from the dreadful head-on crash in the Cotswolds, RAF flats in Carterton, and many other items. On side two, we start with some music, followed by the Christian comment. You will then hear a short but beautiful poem by G.K. Chesterton called The Donkey. This is very apposite to Palm Sunday, and I'll say more about it later. For our Christian comment, we are expecting Ken Mumford, but he may have swapped. Anyway, we shall see. Our four readers are Harold Warner, Marion Pomeroy, David Claremont, and Margaret Brown. So, Harold, perhaps you can kick off.
The first one. Family and friends have paid tribute to a 20-year-old West Oxfordshire man killed in a head-on crash in the Cotswold that claimed seven lives. Ryan Bott, a former Chipping Norton school pupil, was a passenger in a Peugeot that collided head-on with another car on the winding Fossway, the A429, between Moreton-in-Marsh and Stow-on-Wold. The driver of the Peugeot, Mr. Bott's step-cousin, Jason Brain, 35, was overtaking another vehicle. Mr. Brain has a previous conviction for drink driving and fleeing a crash on the same stretch. All four occupants of Mr. Brain's Peugeot died at the scene, as did the driver of the other car it hit, grandfather John Kirby. His wife Margaret, 61, and their daughter Julie died later in hospital. The couple's grandchildren, Adam and Sophie Stone, 10 and 9 respectively, were fighting for their lives in the hospital. Mr. Bott's parents, Mr. Richard Bott and Valerie Hornsby, paid tribute to their son, a keen footballer who went to school in Enstone and Chipping Norton. They said he was a popular young man, and friends have been calling at the family home in Milton under Wychwood on Saturday. Mr. Hornsby said, "We've had a lot of his friends knock on the door and tell us they miss him. They thought the world of him. Four came to the door, and we have lots of phone calls. They are all just devastated by it all. He was a very caring young man. He had many friends and enjoyed socializing. It was not right that this has happened. Everyone liked him." And she added, "It's always the nice ones that go."
Marion, perhaps you could continue with this item.
Yes, Mr. Bott's parents did not want to comment about Mr. Brain, but said their son had left his van in Chipping Norton so he could go out with his step-cousin. Miss Hornsby said, "He got on really well with Jason. Since they met at my mother's funeral, they got together and started going out drinking and socialising." She added, "He made lots of friends. He was a very sociable young man. He cared for people. He cared for the old people on his window cleaning round. He was always going round and having a chat with them. He was telling me how one old lady fell over her frame and he made sure she was okay and sat with her and made her a cup of tea while they waited for someone to arrive. He said to me, 'If I can just help somebody every day, I would be happy.' That is the sort of lad he was." Mr. Bott added, "He was so well liked and he made friends wherever he went. He loved football and supported Manchester United. He played for Enstone and Middle Barton and could play anywhere on the pitch. He just enjoyed playing. We moved here from Enstone 3 years ago and he made friends immediately. He went to the Bell Inn at Chipping Norton and left his van there and met Jason, the driver, who was his step-cousin. He was a window cleaner, but he used to do dry stone walling with me. His mate got him a window cleaning round in Banbury and he'd been doing quite well. He was trying to find somewhere in Banbury to live. Mr. Bott, a former pupil of Enstone Primary School and Chipping Norton School, had two sisters, Vicky, 18, and Laura, 33, and two brothers, Clint, 31, and Ben, 26. his club, Enstone, cancelled its game on Saturday in the Oxfordshire Senior League as a mark of respect. The two women who died in Mr. Brain's car have been named locally as Natasha Didcot, aged 15, and Mikola Jones, aged 31.
David, could you?
Whitney's new college campus has attracted one of the highest funding grants from the government. It has emerged. Main building work is expected to start before Christmas this year and completion of the whole site in early 2011. The Learning and Skills Council, LSC, is bearing 87% of the redevelopment cost of the town centre site, estimated at £30.5 million. The remaining 13% of the funding will come through bank loans repayable through the college's annual income. Principal Teresa Kelly said, "We are absolutely delighted because this is one of the highest grants given out by the LSC. It is very, very high. The average is about 40%. They obviously have huge confidence in us. They see Whitney as a growing town in a growing district with a growing student population. The banks are also quite keen to lend to colleges because they're backed by the government and because we're going to be around for a long time to come. The campus is part of Abingdon and Whitney College, formed from a merger in 2001. Whitney has 600 full-time students aged 16 to 18 and about 2,000 adult and part-time learners, with a staff of about 200. Details of the redevelopment of the Whitney campus, first announced last October, have emerged this week. A full planning application has been submitted to West Oxfordshire's District Council, with a decision expected over the next 2 or 3 months. But because there has been lengthy dialogue between the college and council officers over the last year, no significant hitches are likely.
Margaret.
Whitney MP David Cameron compared RAF flats in Carterton, due for demolition, to the Russian city of Volgograd, formerly Stalingrad, after its Second World War destruction. He condemned the state of armed forces accommodation in Oxfordshire and suggested improvements were needed most urgently at RAF Brysnorton, in his own constituency, which had some of the worst forces housing in the country. He added, "The town next to Brysnorton has a whole series of empty flats left to vandals and used to take drugs, which gradually downgrades the whole neighbourhood. It wouldn't take a lot to get in there and do something about it. Forces' families' welfare should be higher up in the in-tray of the MOD. The military covenant isn't just about our responsibilities and obligations to our troops on the front line. It's about our responsibilities and obligations to them back in Britain too." RAF Brysnorton spokesman Kate Zazada applauded Mr. Cameron for fighting for better accommodation for servicemen. She said, "If Mr. Cameron is making his point to highlight the condition of quarters for service personnel as a whole, then I congratulate him." But she stressed the flats in Carterton were not under RAF Brysnorton's control, but a matter for Defence Estates, the MOD body which manages the property for the RAF. Carterton Mayor Phil Scott added, "It's MOD housing, and basically it's become an embarrassment. The place looks really derelict, and people who drive past get a really bad impression of Carterton."
Two other items involving David Cameron.
That's right. Harold. Conservative Party leader David Cameron was in the district recently to lend his support to threatened post offices. The Whitney MP had a busy day in his Whitney constituency, visiting 4 of the 9 outlets threatened with either closure or reduced service. The rural district of West Oxfordshire faces the hardest hit area of the county under proposals unveiled last month by the post office. Mr. Cameron said the proposals are the completely underestimate the vital social role that post offices play in rural communities such as West Oxfordshire. The sackful of letters I have received from a number of signatures on petitions, the packed village hall meetings, all demonstrate the importance of my constituents' place on their local post office and the passion they have for keeping them at the heart of the community. If these proposals are allowed to go through, it will not only take away much-valued service, but also undermine a cornerstone of rural community life, and that is unacceptable. The MP met postmasters and postmistresses, as well as local residents, who are all fighting hard to keep their local post offices open. His first call was at Stanmore Crescent in Carterton, where shop partners Melanie Kelly and Wanda Huggett are backed by more than 1,000 signatures to keep in their fight to keep their post office open. Many of the supporters are RAF families who use it to send free postage parcels to their husbands in Afghanistan and Iraq, avoiding long queues at the town's other outlets at the co-op store. Mr. Cameron then went on to his own village post office at Chadlington, followed by trips to Wootton and Tackley. Stanmore Crescent, Wootton, Coombe and West End in Witney face outright closures. Outreach services are proposed for Chadlington, Tackley, Great Chew, Great Rollwright and Enstone.
A pub flooded by 5 feet of water last summer has reopened with a helping hand from David Cameron, writes David Horne. Owners and locals at the Maytime Inn are celebrating after 8 months of renovations. At one stage, 32 dehumidifiers were used to get rid of the damp water. The pub reopened on Friday evening to the relief of the landlord, Tim Morgan, who has managed the pub for the past 35 years. Witney MP and leader of the Conservative Party, David Cameron, poured the ceremonial first pint of beer. Mr. Morgan said, "The last 7 or 8 months have been hell, really. There's still a few bits left to do, but I'm so relieved to be open again. Carpets have been replaced with tiles in case there's a repeat of the flooding."
About 50 volunteers turned out at Cogs Farm to give the recently saved attraction a spring clean. Members of the public scrubbed, painted, and tidied their way at the weekend around the museum. Marketing manager Lorraine Horne said, "There has been a really superb turnout despite the weather. We've managed to get lots of jobs done, including cutting hedges, cleaning farm equipment and painting. We've also managed to get a big mail shot done." Many volunteers have come forward and said they will help out in the future. The Witney Rotary Club is going to rebark our children's play area, and the Witney volunteers, Woodland volunteers, will be doing a litter pick. "We have been staggered by the public support, and many, many people have asked what they can do to help. It is definitely down to that that we're still here."
Now, two brief items. Firstly, the inquest into a Special Forces soldier who died on only his second parachute jump in a training exercise was due to open yesterday. Captain Daniel Wright, 25, was taking part in an exercise in November 2005 when his parachute malfunctioned and did not open properly. His reserve parachute also failed. Captain Wright landed near a country road in Weston-on-the-Green and was pronounced dead at the scene. And the second item, a 21-year-old woman who admitted making a false allegation of rape was warned she faced jail. Oxford Crown Court heard Amanda Lang, formerly of Carterton, but now of Withy Grove, Crescent, Bamber Bridge, Preston, had tried to pervert the course of justice by wrongly accusing Philip Troll of rape between November 2006 and February 2007. Judge Julian Hall told her, does not just pass the custody threshold. This sort of offence cannot be treated in any other way. You must prepare to be going to prison. Lang was given bail and told to return to court for sentencing on Monday, March the 31st.
There's big business behind our rolling West Oxfordshire countryside. Each year, tourism in the district is contributing more than £213 million to the local economy and providing employment for 4,506 people. About 4.3 million people visited West Oxfordshire each year, coming to a part of the world where many areas are designated as being of outstanding national beauty. The tourism season begins to start in earnest now. The daffodils are out, there's blossom on some of the trees. The district has a helping hand to the marketing of the area and to the tourist industry being branded as Oxfordshire Cotswolds, a natural attraction to visitors from abroad and in our own country. West Oxen District Council has been a key player for many years in helping to promote the area for tourism. And one of the members of the Executive Cabinet, Hilary Biles, has a portfolio for leisure and tourism. She says the council has recently invested in a completely new Oxfordshire Cotswold website, oxfordshirecotswolds.org. The tourism market is a highly competitive one, and our new website is among the best, providing a wealth of information to visitors, and visitors can book accommodation directly online, she said. The new website is continuing to attract visitors from traditional markets such as the USA, the UK, and other EU countries and Australia. But we are also seeing new and emerging markets such as Russia and Canada. The council also helps the tourist industry through its visitor information centres in Witney, Chipping Norton, Burford and Woodstock. And last year, the centres received more than 100,000 visitors through the door and dealt with more than 50,000 additional inquiries by phone, email and fax.
Three brief items. First, children at Chipping Norton School will be weighing Easter eggs and their packaging to see which are the most environmentally friendly. The event is being organised by Oxfordshire County Council to highlight the potential problem of overpackaged Easter eggs. Second, the story of the town and gown relationships in Oxford, No Little Scandal to God and Man, is the subject of a talk by Chris Day at the next meeting of the Witney Historical Society on March the 18th, 7:30 p.m. at the Corn Exchange, Witney. Visitors and new members are welcome. And third, plans for the redevelopment of the former Osprey pub and filling station site in Upavon Way, Carterton, have been submitted to West Oxfordshire District Council. The Fraser Group has a scheme for 50 new homes along with a new garage forecourt and car wash and a new pedestrian crossing over Upavon Way.
More than 30 students and staff from Finstock Primary School were treated to a pub lunch at their local, the Plough Inn, so that they could taste just how good food can be when cooked by a talented chef from food sourced locally and sustainably. The children were given the choice of fisherman's pie made with sustainable fish or cottage pie created using prime West Oxfordshire beef and cooked by Joe McCorry, chef and co-proprietor. Butchers of Witney donated the beef for the cottage pie, and New Wave Seafoods of Fairford donated the fish. Mr. McCorry said it was great to see the children tucking into their food with such enthusiasm. They enjoyed it so much that we were given three hip hip hoorays, which is keeping with an old school custom when they want to say thank you, he said. Paul Barnett, the head teacher of Finstock School, said that the lunch was a great success. He called it a real community event. We don't have school meals, as there are only 52 children at the school, so to sit down together and enjoy a delicious hot meal was a real treat. The children loved it. And the article goes on, Mr. Macari said, "Events like this are a great way to put something back into the community, without whose support pubs would close. It is also important to demonstrate to youngsters that the Great British Pub is a friendly, sociable place." Mr. Macari is convinced that the smoking ban is encouraging more and more families to eat together in their local pub.
A West Oxfordshire mother whose twins survived premature birth has backed a national stand, Stand Up for Tiny Lives campaign. Gail Lane's two girls, Sophie and Emily, are now 11 years old and are leading normal, healthy lives. At the time, she did not know that premature birth is the single biggest cause of death among babies in this country, but she is now hoping people across Oxfordshire will support a call by the charity Action Medical Research for an independent inquiry. The campaign, backed by leading scientists and researchers, aims to get support and funding for more research into understanding why there is a higher risk of infant mortality. It has already raised more than $3 million. Mrs. Lang, a former paediatric specialist, and her husband Michael, a serving officer in the RAF, live with their children in Carterton. Sophie and Emily were born either side of midnight at the John Ratcliffe Hospital, Oxford, weighing just 3 pounds 13 ounces and 3 pounds 6 ounces. Mrs. Lang said they were whisked straight away into special care. After 10 days' recovery, I went home without them, which felt weird. My husband and I felt so very helpless. It was traumatic to see the girls in incubators with nasogastric tubes. We couldn't do all the normal things that you do with newborn babies. They were too small to bath. Finding clothes was a struggle, and nappies were quite a hurdle too. I don't think anyone who has experienced premature birth could imagine how terrifying it is. Our girls are now healthy, happy children who will soon be teenagers, but it could have been so different. We think we're extremely lucky. After their birth, the twins cause little developmental problems for husband and wife, but that is not always the case. There are about 50,000 babies a year born too soon in the UK, and the Department of Health reports a lack of understanding about how best to predict or prevent premature birth.
Police community support officers in Witney have been issued with new head cameras when they go out on the beat. The PCSOs were given their first go with the £1,000 mini video cameras, which is hoped will cut drink-fueled crime as well as recording antisocial behaviour. Chief Inspector Dennis Everenden, area commander, said, "In terms of moderating people's behaviour, they are better than CCTV cameras. We have been quite stunned by some of the verbal abuse PCSOs said they get and the way they have been spoken to, and hopefully this will stop that." The idea to give PCSOs more than police officers. If a police officer receives similar level of abuse from someone, that person could be arrested for a public order offence. But now they will be able to record the crime and come knocking on the offender's door. PCSO Tracy Wallace said, "It is early days yet, but we hope it will deter people from treating us antisocially. We are hoping it will help us tackle antisocial behaviour, and we are looking forward to gathering more evidence on crimes as we go about our duties." If the two cameras funded by West Oxfordshire Community Safety Partnership prove successful, a further five could be bought for Carterton, Ensham, Woodstock and Chipping Norton.
Hundreds of families were wrongly warned about a drug being handed out to children after a mistake by a policeman. Pupils and parents at 80 schools in West Oxfordshire were warned of the possible dangers of a fake drug called strawberry meth. The spurious alert came after a police officer unwittingly sent an email via a special system connecting police and schools without checking it with colleagues. The drug, which was also said to be known as Strawberry Quick, had apparently been given to children in sweet form by strangers outside school gates. It had apparently led to two victims being hospitalised, leaving police red-faced, as there had been no such incident. Schools were worried by the threat because of the recent media attention focused on the drug crystal meth, which can result in psychiatric problems for users. West Oxfordshire's most senior police officer was forced to make an embarrassing apology over the mistake. Chief Inspector Dennis Evenden said, "The officer should have double-checked before taking this action, even with his best intentions. We will be making sure this sort of thing does not happen again." Among the schools affected were Edith Morehouse Primary School in Carterton, which sent out 270 letters to parents warning of the drug before issuing a retraction. Nobody at the school was available to comment last week.
A conman, posing as a policeman, tricked his way into the home of a 91-year-old woman, the fifth time the pensioner has been targeted by thieves in 3 years. Neighbourhood watch groups have been put on red alert after so-called distraction burglars plunge new depths in their desperate attempts to trick their way into homes of the vulnerable in Oxfordshire. Last week, the burglary was described as vile, as officers linked the break-in on March 3 at a house in a quiet road in Ensham with an identical burglary in Enstone, where a man posing as a plainclothes detective conned another elderly woman. Last week, the 91-year-old told how the fake policeman even opened her front door when she arrived home early from a hospital appointment. It was the fifth time since 2005 she had fallen prey to distraction burglars. In the latest incident, the bogus officer made off empty-handed, but in previous break-ins, the con men stole precious jewellery. She said one wanted to test the water, and another said he was from the gas people. And now it's someone who said he was working for the police. It really upsets me. I just come back from Whitney Hospital, and the door opened in front of me. He was already in the house, and I found out later he had broken in through the back door. Police are linking the incident to a burglary at a 79-year-old woman's home in the Drive, Enstone, on February the 19th, where a fake policeman tricked his way in. He forced his way in through a window, and when challenged by the pensioner, said he was investigating local burglaries before making off with gold commemorative coins worth £60. In both cases, the burglar is described as white, aged in his 30s, thin with short dark hair. He spoke with a local accent.
That's the last item on side one. Don't forget to let the tape play right to the end before you turn it over. If side two appears to be blank, fast forward a little until the music begins. This problem is due to a variation in the length of tapes.
Donkey by G.K. Chesterton. When fishes flew and forests walked and figs grew upon thorn, some moment when the moon was blood, then surely I was born. With monstrous head and sickening cry and ears like errant wings, the devil's walking parody on all four-footed things, the tattered outlaw of the earth, of ancient crooked will, starve, scourge, deride me. I am dumb. I keep my secret still. Fools, for I also had my hour, one far fierce hour and sweet. There was a shout about my ears and palms before my feet.
I hope you enjoyed that poem. You will have appreciated that it is written from the standpoint of a donkey. All you need to know, really, is that Christ rode into Jerusalem on a donkey and the townsfolk strewed palms before him. For our Christian comment, we now welcome Peter Goodall.
Hello there. On any visit to London, which includes a journey on the tube, it is essential to look at a map of the London Underground. The London Underground map is simple sign language to help us make sense of a huge, complicated network of rails and tunnels crisscrossing under the streets. The whole thing is so enormous to understand that we need this simple map. But when we travel on the Underground, it only works well because, as well as the simple map in our hand or on the station wall, the actual tracks are laid in those deep, dark tunnels, and the electrical power is surging through all the thick cables, and the computers are busy checking where each train is, so that they don't bump into one another, and that the escalators are oiled and running smoothly. Although all this doesn't show up on our London Underground map of coloured lines, we only have to look at it and we know that all the real stuff is right there. On Palm Sunday, many in our churches go home with a small palm cross. In a way, the simple cross shape is like one of those maps of the London Underground. Behind its simplicity is all the real, deep stuff, and what the empty cross truly represents. On Good Friday and over Easter, we are invited to draw near to the cross of Jesus Christ and reflect upon its meaning and significance, to consider the depth of the love of God for us and for all, a suffering love which would take Christ to his cross, where he gave up his life, taking all the selfishness and wrong upon himself, stretching out his arms in welcome and forgiveness, that we might have peace with God and one another. The cross was not the end of Christ. His rising holds out to us the promise of new life and new hope. So next time you look at the cross, look beyond to its meaning. Go deep and get ready for a journey of faith this Easter. And a very happy Easter to you all.
Thank you very much, Peter. Was most interesting. Thank you. Items.
Right. Rugby Union, Berks, Bucks and Oxen, Premier Division. Chipping Norton had to put their title celebrations on ice after losing 10-9 at home to Bicester. Bicester's victory ended Chippy's 100% league record, but they only edged the points by the width of a post. A try from hooker James Davis gave Bicester a 10-9 lead with 8 minutes of normal time remaining. But with the stoppage time approaching, Chippy's replacement fly half, Jamie Larkin, saw his 40-metre penalty hit the left-hand side of the post and bounce clear. Chippy could argue they deserved victory, but in terms of territory and possession, but they were never able to open up a committed Bicester side who scored the game's only tries. Indeed, had Locke Dan Spencer remembered his kicking boots from the previous week, Bicester would have won comfortably. On the kicking front, Chippy could only point to a regular fly half, Adam Smith, to a foot injury. The strong crosswind was never going to produce a fluent open game of rugby, but there was plenty of drama.
Football. Clanfield succumbed to a Tyrone Simpson hat-trick as they slipped to defeat in Division 1 West. Titherington went in front on 10 minutes when Simpson netted from what appeared to be an offside position. Steve Knight levelled with a brilliant shot from 20 yards, but within 6 minutes the home side were back in front when Chris Benson slipped and let Paul Bright in. In the second half, Titherington stretched their lead further when Simpson grabbed his second, and he completed his treble when Stuart Hicks upended Simpson in the box and Simpson placed a spot kick into the net. Neil Thompson added a fifth for the home side before Steve Olfert drilled home a late consolation.
Now we have a football match which went disastrously wrong. Four players received their marching orders at North Lee, conceded two late goals to suffer another huge setback to their Premier Division title aspirations at Aynsham Park. Tony Grant and Simon Fucher saw red for North Lee in the second half, while Shortwood's James Singh and Leon Cornwall were also dismissed. Shortwood led 2-0 inside 15 minutes through James Baldwin and Singh. North Lee replied 8 minutes before the break when Andy McCabe's goal-bound header was handled on the line by Singh, who was red-carded. Striker Mark Sims stepped out to fire home the resulting penalty. Ben Reardon pulled the home side level just after the break. But the game turned on two penalty incidents inside 3 minutes. Shortwood's Ben Nigwa was felled in the area, with Grant being sent off for the challenge. Pugh converted the spot kick. At the other end, Reardon was tripped inside the box, but Shortwood keeper Matt Barth made a superb save to tip Sims' penalty onto the bar. Chris Davies then made it 4-2 to Shortwood before Fucher and Cornwall were sent off, following a stoppage time brawl.
More football. Whitney United ended their poor run with a hard-fought victory at Wilkes Park. Welcoming back several regulars, Whitney went in front when Matt Rolfe overhit a back pass which went into the net. Whitney's lead was doubled, followed a rush of blood from Flackwell keeper Carl Dennison. As the ball ran across the area, Dennison petulantly kicked out and tripped Kevin Lewis. Gary Wickin stepped up to fire home the resulting spot kick. The home side reduced the arrears when Paul Reid hit a first-time shot across Chris Webb. Andrew Youngie went close when his shot flew inches wide before the end of the half. After the break, the home side had the wind in their favour. They went close through Ricardo Cannon, who fired over the bar, while at the other end, Uni was denied by the feet of Dennison. There was almost a second own goal when Uni's cross smashed against Richard Lynn, but Dennison did well to block. Lewis also went close after a John Steedman corner fell to him at the far post, but his low shot was kept out by Dennison. As the game moved into stoppage time, Whitney settled the match, courtesy of a first goal for Lewis Brownhill. Harry Burnley burst in from the flank, delivering a low and hard cross, which Brown Hill met to slide home.
Now the notice board. There were three birthdays to mention. On the 17th of March, Mrs. Frieda Long of Carterton. On the 17th of March also, Mr. D. Freeman of Chipping Norton. On the 18th of March, Mr. Nicholas Solomon of Aston. Also on the 18th of March, Mrs. K. Hanks of Stonesfield. On the 19th of March, Mrs. C. Jackson of Whitney. Many happy returns of the day to all of you. Now for the quiz. First of all, let me give you the answers to last week's questions. The first question, if you remember, was, the berries of what shrub-like plant are used to make gin? The answer is juniper. The second question was, where would you find a plimsoll line? The answer is on the side of a ship. The third question, what was the first full-length animated cartoon feature film? The answer is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. The fourth question, what desert separates Egypt and Israel? Answer, the Negev. Now, this week's questions. Question one, what explosive device was invented by Alfred B. Nobel, founder of the Nobel Peace Prize? Second question, what is the ingredient which turns curry yellow? Three, who was killed on the Ides of March? Four, what is the world's longest river? Now, there are some deaths, I'm afraid, to announce.
The following deaths were announced this week. On the 2nd of March, Walter Caleb Townsend, age 85 years. On the 2nd of March, Philip Hawkins, age 50 years. On the 6th of March, Trevor Campbell Elsmore, age 82 years. And on the 6th of March, James Jim Halliday, age 63 years.
Oxfordshire's top drugs officer said the county was on the verge of a mental health epidemic unless more was done to tackle cannabis abuse. PC Lee Thompson, the county's drugs coordinator, called on the government to reclassify the drug after statistics show misuse had soared in Oxfordshire in the past 4 years. The number of cannabis farms and people caught using the drug has risen since the government downgraded cannabis to a Class C drug in 2004. Previously, the drug had been graded a Class B substance. PC Thompson said, I definitely want to see cannabis go back to being a Class B drug. If you have underlying mental health illness, then smoking cannabis will bring it out. It's worrying that over the next 4 or 5 years, we do not know what will be coming along for these people. Smoking cannabis is still a criminal offence. The drug causes misery. I've seen a family in Oxfordshire where a young person is smoking cannabis and it's destroyed them. There has been an increase in the use of cannabis since the reclassification because people thought it was legal. We have noticed that more people are getting arrested and cautioned for cannabis possession. We need a greater awareness campaign to let people know that cannabis is still illegal. In Oxfordshire, 341 people have received a caution for cannabis possession since April last year. During the same period in 2006, police issued 301 cautions. PC Thompson also criticised the sale of drug paraphernalia, which he said glorified the use of cannabis. Since reclassification, the number of cannabis factories discovered across the county has rocketed. In 2005, no cannabis factories were found in Oxfordshire, but that increased to 9 in 2006 and 25 last year. There have already been 2 cannabis factories found in Oxford this year. Drugs are classified A to C depending on their strength and what politicians perceive their potential health risks to be. The higher the classification, the tougher the sentence if an individual is caught in possession.
Now, 2 items from the Farringdon Folly. First, David.
The sight of the police helicopter swooping low over Farringdon town centre on the afternoon of Wednesday the 20th of February and the presence of several extra police cars and officers alerted people to the fact that something big was going on. It transpired that 2 men had driven to Challow in one car where they stole another one and drove back, both of them, back to Farringdon. They were spotted in Gravel Walk and stopped by police, where one of the men was detained and arrested and is now on police bail. The second man ran off down Gloucester Street with PC Redmond giving chase. Eventually, after much police activity and searching, including the spotter helicopter, in the grounds of Farringdon House and elsewhere, he gave himself up and was arrested. Prior to this, a member of the public in a silver-grey Volkswagen Golf stopped and gave a lift to PC Redmond, who had lost his man, and gave him a lift back to the scene. The police would like to thank this member of the public.
A local campaign has been launched to preserve the Adams Road Bridge, which is on the Farringdon to Uffington Railway Bridge line, and is located on Wickersham Farm near Farringdon. The bridge, which is notable for its broad gauge width, also contains a 9-inch water ring main within it and is in a public bridleway. It is owned by BRB Residuary Limited, whose job it is to discharge the remaining functions of the British Railways Board. BRB recently carried out an assessment of the bridge to decide its long-term future and is currently planning to infill the void below the bridge with rubble and concrete and place metal handrails along the top, their main priority being safety for bridleway users. However, the owners of the land on which the bridge stands, Tom and Cheryl Allen Stevens, are strongly in favour of restoring the bridge instead and are currently negotiating with BRB to this end. They think that restoration of this bridge is a viable project with limited technical risk, as long as prevention of further damage starts as soon as possible. Farringdon's Mayor John Gilman has also taken an active interest in the bridge and commented, "I appreciate that the bridge is not in the middle of Farringdon, but it is on a bridleway and very easily accessed to those who wish to see it. The bridge represents an important part of Farringdon's history, also the history of the GWR in broad gauge. It is very important that it is preserved and given back the dignity it had when it was built. It is obvious by the quality of the brickwork that it was expertly built. This quality of construction now needs to be displayed."
Helen Peacock writes, "When my elderly mother was sent home from the Churchill Hospital for the first time, she was in no condition to be left alone. Indeed, her local GP arranged for her to be sent back immediately. This time, the NHS could not only get it right, but they really have pushed the boat out by sending her to Middleton Grange Care Home Hayley, which is likened to the Hilton Hotel. Apparently several beds at this luxurious place were set aside for NHS patients who needed time convalescent after hospital treatment. My mother was lucky enough to be given one of them, and now she is being fed cooked breakfast with all the trimmings, the most scrumptious lunches and teas, with snacks in between as she needs them to help build up her strength. We felt hungry just listening to her speak about the meals, and she was being offered, but thank goodness we'd made a lunch booking at a nearby pub, which we were confident would feed us just as well after our visit, and it did. Having left the nursing home, which is situated on the main road running through Hayley, the B4022, we carried on through this attractive village for about a mile and a half until we came to the Bird in Hand, which stands on the right-hand side after a reasonably sharp corner. This lovely pub stands alone and is surrounded by countryside. The beams and exposed Cotswold stones dominate throughout the series of small eating areas that make up this pub. It's all extremely atmospheric, thanks in part to friendly staff who go out of their way to ensure you have everything you need. Our pork and beef roasts were beautifully displayed on the plate and tasted just as good as they looked. One bonus about eating here is the fact that much of the meat comes from the award-winning Foxbury Farm near Bryce Norton. Their eggs are organic and supplied by Lyle's, and some of their cheese is sourced from the newly Windrush Dairy.
Young Matthew Lee misses his football, and his mates are missing him as captain of their junior team. The 13-year-old has been put out of action since suddenly falling ill and being diagnosed with leukemia just before Christmas. It came as a shock to the family, but also to the squad, many of whom have been playing in the same Carterton boys team since they were 8 years old. So they decided to get together and raise money in the best way they could, a sponsored training session, dribbling a ball for an hour each. And before Carterton boys under-13's home game against Banbury, they gave Matthew a surprise by handing him over a Nintendo Wii, the latest computer console craze, to while away the hours indoors. They bought it out of the £1,100 they raised in sponsorship, and the rest of the money, about £750, was handed over to Cancer Research UK. Matthew came along with his dad, Darren, to watch some of the game at the Kilkenny Lane ground. Just 2 days before, he'd been at the John Radcliffe Hospital, Oxford, for a blood transfusion. He's already undergone chemotherapy. Darren, who used to manage the team, said, "They're really good, really loyal group of kids. They've all been together since they were under eights, and Matt's really thankful for what they've done. Matt and the rest of the team are all pupils at Carterton Community College, but his diagnosis of leukemia came out of the blue just before Christmas. For a couple of weeks, he'd not been himself. He's usually someone with loads of energy. And first of all, you put it down to colds. So we took him to the doctors, and the day after, they took a blood test, and we were told he had leukemia. We've never had it in the family before, so it came as a shock. He's not too bad at the moment. He has his good days and then not so good the next. My wife Sharon has had to give up work to look after him, and that's how life is at the moment."
A tapestry made by children depicting the history and the life of the Wychwood Forest is on display in the Oxford Town Hall. It was first displayed at the Wychwood Forest Fair in West Oxfordshire last September. And the Town Hall exhibition is the first venue in a tour of the county. Children at primary schools in Chadlington, Finstock, Leafield, Stonesfield and Shipton under Wychwood contributed to the work, which is 30 metres long, under the guidance of local artists Sally Hawkins and Tom Ralphs. They drew inspiration from pictures, leaves, bark, fossils, old farming tools, and even stuffed animals. The Oxford Town Hall display lasts to the end of the month. Because of its size, only sections will be shown at venues during Arts Week and other village events in the following months.
The theme has been settled on for this year's 34th annual Levellers' Day in Burford. Time for a written constitution will be discussed with prominent speakers yet to be announced at the Warwick Hall, Church Green, on the morning of Saturday, May the 17th. It will be followed by the traditional parade around the town, with pikemen in 17th century costumes, banners and Morris dancers. The annual commemoration ceremony to honour the three Levellers soldiers executed on the orders of Oliver Cromwell because they refused to serve in Ireland in 1649 is in the churchyard. The event, 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m, is organised by the Levellers Day Committee, affiliated to the Workers' Educational Association.
The new electronic kiosk has been installed by West Oxfordshire District Council at Chipping Norton Guildhall for people to access tourist information and even look at the new planning applications. Local residents can also use the display screen and the keyboard to pay their council tax bills. It's free of charge and open Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. and till 2 p.m. and to 4:30, but is only 4 p.m. on Friday afternoons. And the next little article is the Tremaine Veterinary Group at Farm Mill Lane and Alverscott Road, Carterton, is running a vaccination amnesty during March, offering full vaccine courses for the cost of a booster. It is part of a national campaign to protect cats, dogs and rabbits. For more information, contact the surgeries on 01993 704 134.
Well, that's all we have time for. Please let the music play through to the end before switching off your machine and removing the tape. Don't forget to reverse the label on the plastic pouch before posting it back to us in time for our next edition. It only remains for me to thank the Witney Gazette and Farringdon Folly for the stories we have used tonight. Thanks also to our technical expert, Martin Miles, and Ian Rose and Mike Herbert, who are cleaning and copying the tapes, and our volunteers, who have been checking the pouches and tapes you have returned and keeping records of this in our register, Hannah O'Sullivan, Francis Pike, and Louise Claremont. And finally, our four readers, Harold Warner, Marion Pomeroy, David Claremont, and Margaret Brown. I know everyone would like to say goodbye, and so until our next edition.
Goodbye. Goodbye.